Yeah, so continuing the tale of two penetrometers here, I'd like to thank Mateo for the wonderful introduction to the topic of penetrometer-mounted spectroscopy. So we'll be approaching the use of penetrometer spectroscopy a little bit different, whereas Mateo was using an in-situ calibration. We'll be discussing a method here for trying to utilize existing dried ground spectral libraries for in-situ predictions. So kind of stepping back and looking at the big picture of why we are interested in instrumentation and technologies in the first place, and I think one of the key factors in whether or not we adopt technologies is what promises they fulfill. And I think a big promise of technology, either in the domestic sphere or in the laboratory sphere, is that of time saving, time and energy saving. So we're going to adopt a technology because it makes things easier for us. It saves us some time. So one of the ways Viz and IR spectroscopy saves time is by helping us replace some traditional laboratory analyses with simple spectral scans. So we can dry soil, grind it, bring it into the lab, scan it with the spectrometer, and get a pretty reliable laboratory proxy data without having to go through any chemistry or particle size analysis. This can save us a tremendous amount of time and money. But in order to make those predictions possible, we need a spectral library or a data set of existing soil spectra and physical and chemical properties to build our prediction models. In Texas, we use the Texas Soil Spectral Library. It's a very creative name. And it exists. It's all of the soil pedons that have been run through our characterization lab that we've gone and we've scanned with the spectrometer. So it's an enormous investment in time and energy collecting the pedons and also scanning them, but also a large investment in cost. The particle size data alone costs around $73,000 in our library. That doesn't include data on CEC and fertility. So quite an investment. Which brings us to a new investment we've made in trying to develop in-situ applications. We're building a penetrometer and starting to field test it. And you see our setup here. Our truck's a little shinier than Mateo's. But the probe... That's an oil truck. I won't go into the specifics of the penetrometer because one of the things I'd like to talk about a little bit more is our library. And some of the challenges we can see with spectroscopy. So we know spectroscopy works really well in the lab when we've homogenized the soil and dried it. But in the field, as soil scientists, we know that soil is not homogeneous. We have small areas where you have maybe differences in texture due to redox features or clay deposition. And so I'm showing these two sections of a core that have been scanned. The mustard brown color is our soil matrix. And the black is a iron and manganese concretion. Using our dried ground library on these two spectra, you'll see the spectra are quite different, and that leads to very different predictions. And so this is one of the challenges we see in Texas, where we have lots of redox features. We're having some small-scale heterogeneity. How do we account for that in our in-situ measurements? But maybe the bigger challenge in in-situ spectroscopy is the effect of water content. So everyone's been to the beach or seen soil that's dry and soil that's wet. We know that they're very different in color. They have different reflective characteristics. So the upper panel is showing one soil at several water contents. And so the air-dried state is the black line in the top. And as we add water to that soil, the reflectance decreases as some of that water is absorbing the energy. And if we try to take these wet soil scans and apply them using our predictions made with our dried ground library, we see that as the water content increases, the predictions get worse and worse, and they move farther away from that solid black one-to-one line. So we're kind of left at a little bit of an impasse. We've invested an enormous amount of money in a dried ground library, and we've invested quite a bit of money in a penetrometer, and We're left at this position where we can do Mateo's approach, develop a new in-situ library, so collecting more data, new laboratory analysis, Or we could try to find some way to recover our dried ground library and utilize it for these in-situ data. And the way we're going to approach that is using a projection technique called the external parameter orthogonalization, which essentially boils down to the fact that you could decompose a spectra into a useful component, we'll call that XP, and a parasitic component called XQ. So XQ is the portion of the spectra that contains the information that is useful. So that's our XP. XQ is maybe information related to water content, temperature differences, and that's the information we want to remove from the spectra. So essentially, the EPO boils down to estimating a p-matrix that we can use to project our in-situ spectra and our library, and then we can make predictions on those projected spectra. So the panels at the top shows that same soil again. Now we're looking at three water contents, and that's before application of the EPO. We multiplied the spectra by our projection matrix, and now we have a new transformed set of spectra in the lower panel. And what you'll notice is that the spectra line up much, much closer. They started to collapse down on top of each other. And the two closest water contents, the black and blue line, are almost indistinguishable. So we've removed the effect of water content from the spectra. One thing to note here is that we haven't added any information of the soil water content. We don't know the soil water content in the spectra. The EPO works without any of that information. So you don't need to know soil water content to essentially remove those effects. So does the EPO work? Well, we had a graduate student several years back collected a set of in-situ cores. So he took cores in the field, brought them back into the lab. While they were in the field moist condition, he scanned the cores. And so we had this data set of simulated in-situ cores. So these are field moist conditions. The panel on the left shows that raw in-situ, simulated in-situ data, trying to make predictions with the dried ground library before the EPO. And the data doesn't work. We see that there's really high RMSE, the RPIQ is very low, so we're not getting any predictive power with our dried ground library. The panel on the right is the same data with the library and the data, or the raw spectra, transformed with the EPO. What we find is that data collapses down along the one-to-one line, and we get much nicer predictions. So it appears that in this kind of toy example, the EPO works quite well at removing the effect of water content. So to our preliminary field trials, we're doing all of our sampling so far in the Brazos Valley in Texas. That's designated by the star on the map. All of the red counties are counties that have data in our spectral library. So we cover quite a large geographic region with our spectral data. The magenta points are our sampling locations, and those are at two sites. One is on a alluvial terrace where we've collected six soil cores, and these are much older soils on Pleistocene age sediments. They're much more developed, alpha sols and vertisols with lots of horizonization and good development of clay content, alluviation of clay. Then the floodplain cores, these are much recent, more recent Holocene deposits, and we're dealing mostly with inceptisols and entisols here. So at each site, we collected penetrometer data at a pretty fine depth resolution of 2 centimeters, and we also collected soil cores. We brought the cores back into the lab, segmented them into 2-centimeter segments, dried, ground, and processed the soils like we would for our dried ground vis and IR predictions. We're using first derivative for our predictions here in PLS models, but I don't know, after seeing some of Matteo's work, I might move away from that first derivative. To validate our data, we collected information on clay content. To do that, we bulked the soils by horizon and did the particle size analysis on the pipette method for our terrace soils and hydrometers for the floodplain. So before we can think about whether or not the EPO works, it's important to think about whether or not we can recreate that dry ground condition. So this is showing the dry ground spectra projected or predicted clay content with our dry ground library. What we're seeing is RMSE is very good. Everything's nice and tight along the one-to-one line. and we're getting pretty close to the same kind of precision we could imagine with our laboratory data. This isn't surprising. This isn't news. We hope that if this didn't work, we would have a much bigger problem. So then the question is, does the EPO fundamentally change our soil spectra in a useful way? One way we can visualize that is by looking at the projection of the spectra in principal component space. So the panel on the left shows the spectral data for our library in black, our dried ground data in blue, and our penetrometer, our in-situ data in red. The left panel is showing before the projection. And what you'll notice is that the centroid of our penetrometer data lies much farther away from our dried ground and our library data. We then project the data with the EPO, and what you'll notice is that those centroids start moving much closer to each other. So it looks like in principal component space, our EPO is moving the spectra much closer to each other, and they're kind of aligning a lot better. But then the question becomes, does it really work? So here we're showing measured clay content on the x-axis and predicted clay content on the y-axis. So these are all PLS predictions made with a dried ground library. The blue points represent our in-situ data both prior to projection with the EPO. And the thing that jumps out at you right away is that it doesn't work at all. That's not surprising. We know that there's water in these soils. We know that that's interfering with our spectra, and we're not going to get quality predictions. Then we project the data with the EPO, and what you'll notice, the thing that jumps out immediately is that the bias drops to almost zero. So we're moving that spectra right along the one-to-one line. We've still got some RMSE issues. We'd like to kind of get that back down closer to our dried ground case, but it's predicting pretty well. So where does that leave us? Well, we've got a penetrometer. We've got a dry ground library, in-situ data, and it looks like it's useful and looks like it's accurate. We can do a little bit to improve it. And we have this EPO that we're working on developing that will help us utilize those dry ground libraries. So maybe if you have a penetrometer and you have a library, you don't have to go out and collect a new in-situ library. You can utilize the data that exists already. And this is good news if you're NRCS and you just invested a lot of money in RACA. You've got this huge spectral library that's just sitting there. Now all you need to do is buy a penetrometer from someone who's willing to make you one. and then you can go to town and you can collect beautiful little profiles like this where we're showing the in-situ predicted clay content is the black dots, and the blue line represents a 10-centimeter moving average of that data. And the really great thing about these kind of profiles is that it helps you visualize what we know as pedologists and as soil scientists is happening in the field. So this is your typical Central Texas paleostalph. We're showing a light gray, highly leached, fine sandy loam surface moving down to a much nicer red BT horizon. And we're seeing this in the spectra data, and it's reflected in the cores that we've taken. So it looks like we're starting to develop a nice, neat, cool tool that hopefully can be utilized for high-resolution depth sensing of soil properties. With that, I'd like to acknowledge our funding sources, the USDA Lincoln Lab, as well as the field assistants from the students who really worked really hard recently to collect this data. With that, I'll open up for questions. If I have time.